Hi, everybody. Welcome to Intuitive Awakening. My name is Dina. Thank you so much for joining me here today. I have a lovely co-host who has joined me on previous episodes to help shine some light on some of these questions that we have in life. So my co-host today is Erin, who is also a Reiki practitioner and an intuitive reader. So say hi to everybody, Erin.
Hey, everyone. Happy to be here today.
Thank you so much for joining me. So everybody, this is going to be an unstructured call. I should put a disclaimer, pretty much an unfiltered view of God. So we're going to take on the challenging task of trying to elucidate for everybody what God is and how we know this definitively. No, I'm just kidding. We have all the answers today. We know what God is. If you want to know what it is, then you better tune in, you know, completely today, because we pretty much have solved the mystery of life.
That's a joke for anyone who might be angry.
Exactly. So this is very unstructured. The reasoning behind this call is that Erin and I, was this yesterday that we did this?
Less than 24 hours ago, I believe.
Oh my God. So Erin and I were ranting about, you know, life as we know it and God in general. And we found it to be a very enlightening conversation for the both of us, I think. So some of the things we might say you might want to consider taking with a grain of salt. Other things are really just food for thought.
Yep.
So I will kind of kick this off by asking you, because I know my background, of course, but, you know, even growing up, what was your initial introduction into this figure we call God?
Right. So so I grew up in somewhat of a Catholic, you know, household. My mom, she always says, you know, go to church. She loves, you know, to talk about God. But yet she didn't necessarily go to church every Sunday, or, you know, maybe even once a month at some points. So it was very interesting to, like, you know, be introduced to this concept of this is what God is. And, you know, God, you know, the Ten Commandments are a whole, you know, other thing for me to really discuss, because sometimes I don't necessarily disagree with some of the things that, you know, is presented with, you know, the concept of God in the Bible and such. But, you know, my vision was definitely, you know, this almighty force that if you piss him off, like, you're screwed. So you gotta live by these rules that are in this book. Otherwise, you know, you're going to hell and you're condemned. And of course, for me, you know, I'm gay, so that whole concept was something against for what who I was. And I, you know, definitely in high school, I didn't agree with it. I was like, there's no God, there's no concept of it's just something people talk about. But yet I was, you know, obviously into the intuitive and metaphysical world. And I was definitely fascinated with the concepts of it. And so, like, it was a struggle for me, especially in my teen years and early 20s, to really think about what God was, who he was, what my belief of God or, you know, the universe was. So, you know, I at this point, I do believe there is a God, or at least a God force of some sort, but it's not in any way similar to the concepts that, you know, they portray, at least in the Catholic upbringing that I was raised into.
So I have a question for you about this, because long story short, you know, my mother, before she, you know, decided to leave, was raised Catholic as well. And so I remember when I was very, very young that she wanted us to go to a Catholic school. So other than that, I have, like, no memory. I have no real knowledge of, you know, being a part of the Catholic Church and what some of the tenets are and what some of the, you know, homilies or sermons, you know, are, particularly, you know, from a Catholic perspective. So I kind of wondered, like, do you remember going to church and what some of the sermons were? Like, did they preach hellfire, brimstone? Or, I mean, did they really? Because, you know, like, in Black churches, it's like, you know, it's different. So I kind of wondered, like, what did they teach? Like, what were the stories?
Yeah, so up to my first communion, I think I did. But I haven't really been to Catholic Church for an actual mass since I think I was maybe like 10 years old. So it's like over 20 years. And also, just as a side note, for some part of my, you know, elementary school life, I'll say, or before I was 10, I did go to Christian churches as well, because my mom, you know, any idea of God, she was okay with. So we did go with a friend of hers once in a great while, which I actually liked a little more because we would get to go with other kids. But in the Catholic church, I just remember, you know, we'd go in the church that it's not there anymore. Unfortunately, they remodeled it due to it burning down, and, you know, but at that point, I just remember it was like this really, you know, old looking church. It had a bunch of stained glass murals against the walls. And it was very dark inside and always had this like kind of, I want to say maybe like a musty, somewhat mildewish smell for some reason. Because there was like, I think a water or like there's some sort of pond or something inside of it, which kind of went throughout the whole church, plus mixed with the incense and everything. But it was, I mean, I just remember sitting there and all we did was sit there and watch the priest just pretty much speak at us. It wasn't very interactive. It was like, you just sit there and then he'll, you know, say, okay, now we're about to say a prayer. We say the prayer and then we do, we break bread and things like that. And it was just very structured, very, very much a format. Like every Sunday it was the same thing, which I guess now that I think about it, kind of, you know, I was okay with it because I'm very structured as it is, you know, so I didn't think much of it. But, you know, now I have gone to other types of churches, not necessarily Catholic, but I would, you know, one of my best friends is Christian. And so I went to, you know, her church and once or twice just to kind of experience it. And it was very different because people, you know, they spoke back to the minister or the pastor. And so that was a whole different concept to me. I'm like, oh, you can talk to them. You can talk to people that are, you know, preaching, you know, the book. And so, you know, that was an interesting idea to me too, just because they also believe in the Holy Ghost. So that's a, you know, I don't know what it's called when they start, what is it, speaking in tongues, but they would do that. And the first time I saw that, I kind of got a little scared because I didn't know what was going on. And this was maybe like 7 or 8 years ago.
Really? Like, so wait, yeah. they don't speak in tongues at Catholic Church?
They don't. They just literally, like the way I see it is they sit there, they listen to someone talk to them and then they go home. That's it. Like you repeat the prayers that they tell you to say. And, you know, that's my remembrance of it. And I just remember I had to sit still and stuff like that. Not to say that, you know, there was anything bad that ever happened. It was just kind of, it's kind of like, you know, you had to go into class and you sat there. You don't talk back, really. You don't do anything. Just sit there, listen. You know, you pray, you go up and, you know, get bread and or drink wine and then go back to your seat and then finish the rest of whatever, you know, the priest had to discuss that day. And every Sunday was a different, you know, a different lesson to teach, maybe just something that popped into his mind through due to like an interaction he had with someone or something he's just kind of pondering. But yeah, it wasn't scary. It was just kind of, okay, it's church. It's always the same thing. So like nothing really stood out. Like the best part of it afterwards, honestly, for me was that you got donuts at the end.
So churches give donuts out at the end.
Yeah. So they always did that. Donuts at the end, especially on Sundays. That was the day I was like, let's go for the donuts. My mom didn't let us have donuts too much as a kid. But so, yeah, that's how it was for me. That was my, like, that's how I remember, you know, going to church and stuff and religion, I guess, for me.
So my question for you, because I don't want to, you know, again, tell the, you know, the listeners my story, because I think they already know, but so then for you in particular, you didn't have this fear of this person called God growing up? Like you didn't fear like burning in hell? You didn't fear any of that?
Not really. I kind of got, I think early on, maybe in like middle school or high school, so like early teens, I kind of, you know, in my own way kind of thought, you know what, it doesn't exist. There is no hell. You know, I did experience some, you know, certain things from that I remember like people saying or things that I've seen my family members, you know, say or do just due to like, you know, homosexuality. So for me, it was early on, like, and I really didn't know that early, but I knew what they were saying was wrong, you know? And yeah. So I think I just kind of said, there is no God there. I just kind of instantly, you know, as soon as I kind of thought I might be, you know, gay or bisexual or whatnot, for me, that was kind of how funny, and now that I'm thinking about it, it's kind of like, kind of was the format of my basis on religion. Just because I guess early on I kind of knew as a child, but I didn't really know. It wasn't like a conscious concept to me. It was maybe more like a internal instinct that I knew maybe I was a little bit different than other kids. But even then, I'm still different from, you know, other people that I know that are, you know, gay, because I fit in like a different type of box, in my opinion, which we've had that discussion before. So I guess for me, actually, it really was something that kind of shaped the way how I thought about him. So I wasn't afraid of him just because I didn't necessarily believe that he existed. And the way I see it now, because I do think about it often, and my mom still to this day tries to get me to go to church. And I tell her, I said, Mom, because she thinks I'm not atheist. She thinks, atheist. I don't believe in anything. And I'm like, no, Mom, I just don't believe in your concept of God. And I've kind of, you know, I have my own beliefs for sure, but I've just now I'm able to say, I don't believe in the way you believe in. Like, I don't believe he's going to smite people, and I don't believe he's, you know, if you don't do what he says, all of a sudden you're gonna, you know, your house is gonna burn. No, you know. So it's very different now, and you know, I'm more accepting of when she tells me, because every single time, I actually talked to her about an hour ago and she was going to mass, but she was like, go to church, and I'm like, okay, thanks, Mom, I'll see you later.
Well, you know what's interesting about this, I'm gonna throw this out there, because this really shows you the difference in terms of Christianity itself. And so when I was growing up and going to church, like my step grandmother who moved in with us, and she was a hardcore minister, and she's very, very devout, very judgmental. And I don't know if those two go together, but
it makes sense to me. No.
But she, I remember there was somebody I met at school one time who was telling me that, you know, she, some school girl, and she told me that she was Catholic and that her family went to mass. And I asked her, I was like, well, what's that? And she said, oh, it's where you go to pray for the dead. And so I remember I took that back to my grandmother and I asked her about it. And she was so angry. She looked at me and she said, we don't pray for the dead. Their fate is sealed already. There is no way to save them. And I've never forgotten that, because I believed, you know, I believed everything that she told me. And so I believed that praying for the dead was so, so wrong. And little did I know that I now know in my heart it's so, so right. So I wanted to ask you now, because I know that we could talk for a long time and I want to make sure we hit all the points today. So in terms of what you think God is today, after your experiences, after getting some years behind you, what do you think God is today? And, you know, from your perspective?
Well, I mean, after our conversation yesterday, it may have shifted slightly. But before that, I mean, to me, my concept of God, which it's a term is, I do in my own personal prayers in my head, I don't say this out loud to people, but I do use the word God when I, you know, tune in, when I call in on the angels and, you know, kind of ground and get myself set up. But I mean, in my mind, I like to usually use the word universal energy or source energy, just because I feel like it's definitely less like, you know, in your face about one specific religion. Cause I know not all religions say God. They might say, you know, other deities. You know, another one that I kind of say, which is actually from high school, which is like, I don't think I've said it much around you, but like Buddha, I really like that concept of Buddha. So I mean, in my mind right now, God is pretty much kind of everything. So any deity, any ascended master, you know, if saints, those are great. Angels, I'm all for that. You know, like Pele, the fire god, great. Yeah, I'm up for it. And I've since all the, you know, the learning and the lessons that I've experienced over the last few years that I've done this work, I've actually kind of subtly preach to people that my concept of what God is from any religion. I feel like all religions kind of lead to the same place if you practice them, you know, properly, I guess you could say. But then again, that word properly could be a loose term. But I mean, as long as you don't hurt people, you're humble, you have ethics, you know, you treat people with love and respect, and you practice those, you know, I guess religious teachings in a respectful way that doesn't impose onto other people's beliefs, I think that's great.
I have a question for you. So when you were talking about, you know, in your mind that you'll call on source energy and what have you, or these other entities, if you will, I imagine then for you that God is all of that.
Yes. Yeah.
That's like a collective.
A collective. So and that actually now opens more things in my mind, because it, technically, if you just say God, then everything's there with you, right?
Right.
If he's everywhere. And so, and this, I'll just kind of throw it out there, because this is part of our conversation yesterday. You know, if God is everywhere and God is everything, yesterday our conversation kind of went to, you know, what about the energy levels or the dimensional levels? And so that kind of stuck with me since we talked about that, because, and literally just for the viewers, I was driving somewhere and we were just literally throwing things out there. And, you know, one of the things that we had mentioned was God is everything. God is all encompassing, which I agree with, I believe, you know, and, you know, if God is everything that's good, you know, and he is everything, what about the different dimensions that, you know, exist? There's positive dimensions, negative dimensions, you know, is God part of those energies as well? If you don't believe in the concept that there's, you know, that light and dark are completely separate, you know, if God is everything, then why can't God be what the negative things are as well?
And that's the challenge for, I think, you know, not only for us, but for a lot of other people, because you are taught in various scriptures about God. So for example, and I'm just going to throw this out there, you know, if you compare the Old Testament to the New Testament, you have two different interpretations kind of God. You have this vengeful, wrathful God, you know, in the Old Testament, but in the New Testament, you have the emergence of this person called Jesus, who comes to teach that God is a loving entity, so, and forgiving, right? So it's kind of like, you know, if you're saying, if we reconceptualize God as being light and dark, I don't know, maybe the entire Bible is kind of supportive in a way of that argument, just because you have these two different reflections of, you know, God in the Bible. You have the light and the darkness of this so-called being. And I know, just as, you know, a caveat for everybody, I know that the Bible was written by man. Okay, let me just put that out there.
I'm glad I didn't have to say that.
I know that it, you know, supposedly the word of God, but I know about power, hierarchical, you know, structures and manipulation, power control. Like, I get it. I understand there's an overarching agenda there, but I'm just saying, as an example of your argument, you know, to support that case to a certain extent, that if God is everything, is all that is, which is what I was taught from above, then that must encompass all that is and that will ever be.
Right.
Which includes all of us.
Right. I don't disagree. And I mean, especially again, after we've chatted about this, I feel like my concept might actually be shifting a little bit more now, because, you know, when you had mentioned all of this, he's all encompassing, that's where the epiphany kind of came. Well, is he the negative energy? Is he part of those, like, you know, negative entities that we're all trying to protect our energies from? And, you know, does that mean, like, that is the smiteful part of God?
Maybe. I mean, you know? I try to look at it, and I think this is something that you said yesterday as well. If we're looking at the different aspects of what this figure, you know, this entity that we call God is, I imagine that every aspect is an aspect to teach us something, to grow.
Right.
Right. So, and as you know, most of us on this planet, we grow through, unfortunately, through tragedies. And, you know, I hate that we have to learn through fear, but a lot of us usually do. We learn through loss and failure, like the darker aspects, if you will, of life. Right. Like, we learn a lot through that. So I feel like there is a reason for the, you know, the duality that exists here, the light and the dark. And so maybe that is that part of God that is, I don't know, that is the teacher, you know?
Right.
I don't know. I think that's kind of as far as I've gotten. But the other thing that I did say to you yesterday is, or I guess I kind of mentioned this, is that I do think that every aspect of every living thing contains a particle of God's light. That is what activates everything. I feel like that's the activating energy of everything. That's the life force. However, because the law of free will structures the entire universe and operates everywhere, then if you choose to operate within the dimension of darkness, then God, that whatever entity, whatever you want to call it, cannot force you to operate within the light. Like, you have to willingly do that, don't you think, or no?
So you're saying that to operate in the negative energy or lower vibrational dimensions is a choice? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
I mean, it makes sense, definitely, for the concept of free will. I agree with that. I mean, and at the same time, like, do you think, because I've heard all sorts of different things about, you know, the people, like, Hitler's people and everybody else who, like, commits genocide, things like that. So do you think those then are aspects of God in that? Do you think that God is learning lessons through those actions as well? Or do you think that's a whole different energy, a whole different entity?
That's like, so hard. I feel like I'm going to get the wrong answer here.
I know. Well, I mean, I don't know if there is one, because, I mean, in my mind, the way I kind of see things is like, okay, that, you know, it definitely is a negative energy. And before yesterday's conversation, that was like, it's kind of separate, you know, but I didn't necessarily believe like there's like the devil, so to speak. But at the same time, I believe that there's negative energies and entities that you need to stay away from and that try to pull your, you know, what's it called? Wipe out your light, you know? So, I mean, right. But what about these types of people, Hitler and what is it, Stalin? I'm horrible at history, but
and Mussolini. Well, I think okay. So one thing I'm going to take a step back and let people know something that we discussed yesterday, so that they have a point of reference.
Sorry.
And no, it's totally fine. And so I was telling Aaron a little secret that I've held since I was like 15, and I remember I was with my parents, and I don't know if it was a Memorial Day thing, but there was a barbecue, and I remember talking to my dad and my sister, and the conversation kind of came back to God, and I remember blurting out, and I don't know what compelled me to say this, because I was pretty much, you know, heavily into the church, and I kept thinking, and I said, you know, what if God is growing and experiencing life through us, like, and grows through us, and that's how God expands, and so if this is the case, to your argument, Aaron, that means that God would have to be expanding and growing and learning through the darkness as well.
Right, right. And I think, I mean, that when you said that, all of a sudden that's when the questions came, because it makes so much sense to me now that can very well, again, we don't know, but that can very well be, you know, what at least part of what we're going through is, you know, and in my beliefs, we kind of plan an outline of our life. So it's like, is this, you know, all of this is supposed to help God's soul, or like, is this supposed to enhance? I don't know, actually, like, what is this supposed to enhance through these lessons? Like, I know there's lessons, we all choose the lessons for our soul growth, but then once our soul gets to a certain point, like, really, what is out there? And I have read other, you know, aspects, you kind of like ascend and you go into God's love, but then what is that like? I feel like this is more so like, what is the purpose type of conversation, but like, really, what is it? And I don't know if we'll find that answer. But I mean, in terms of the lessons that we're going through, it is weird, because like, yeah, God is, if he's learning through us, you know, then why does our experience have to happen in such a negative way, I guess. But I don't know. It's weird to me to think about it. And I keep going back and forth in my head on different directions of it.
No, I completely, I feel you too. I wonder about that. And it's something that I struggle with too, because I found myself quite lately, I'll have, you know, one-way conversations with God about that very, you know, very question. Like, okay, if you are this creative energy, the source of all things, then how could it be that there was, you couldn't create a better way for us to learn? And I know that that's a really crappy thing to say, but it is something I have really deeply thought of, because I feel like, is it necessary to learn through, you know, really bad and really tough experiences? But maybe for some souls, it really is. Because if you think about it, the whole concept of reincarnation, it's really for the growth of the soul. It's not necessarily, I mean, it is also, of course, yes, to balance what you have done previously, but it is for soul growth to come back here. That's why we continue to choose it, right? But maybe we choose, you know, to learn through the darkness, because for us, that would be the greatest teacher. And maybe we've tried to learn through the light through, let's say, 500 incarnations, and that method just didn't work. And therefore, we needed the darkness to serve us in this way. So therefore, it has its own purpose.
I mean, that makes sense. And ideally, I wouldn't want to go through those lessons many, many times. But I just from like what I have heard in different past life readings that I've had, is there are lessons that I've had to repeat, and in very different ways. And you know, I know I've heard in this life that one of the main lessons for me, and it happens quick, but the lessons for me to really, really learn are in relationships. And my relationships don't necessarily last very long, but they're very intense, and they're very like wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. Like, you get slapped in the face, and then all of a sudden, like, what just happened? And then like, takes me a long time to like, I'll end it real quick, but then I have to really like absorb that lesson. And you know, I'm told that the reason that happens is because of something I did many, many, many lives ago, and I'm having to kind of learn. And in a way, you know, I've asked all of these people to, you know, to do the things that they did before I came into this world. And so that's a whole other concept. Like, why would I do that? What's wrong with me? You know, like, I got angry when I was told that. And, but again, it's to learn a lesson. And, you know, so then if the lessons are for God, but, you know, why am I also doing these things? Or why are these people doing these things to me? And like, how does that interact with the whole, you know, this is a lesson for God? Like, it's, I don't know, it's just why do we have to continue to go through these lessons if you didn't learn them in, you know, 20 lives? And it's like, okay, well, we'll try this way, we'll try that way, maybe we'll try this time frame or that time frame. I don't know.
Right.
It's very interesting to me to even, you know, I guess what I'm trying to do right now, my thoughts, is put the whole thing together, which, you know, obviously won't happen. It's just very interesting, this whole concept of it's all encompassing, we're all connected. Oh, and then what about the collective consciousness? I know we were chatting about that yesterday too.
Right. Well, so, I think just to take a quick step back, I was thinking when you were talking that, again, like, if God is all encompassing, which means the light and the dark and whatever else exists that we don't even have the knowledge about, I imagine that one of the biggest values that we can take from the darkness is that it teaches us what we are not. And I think that's the purpose of the darkness operating here and elsewhere, because if you think about the journey of the soul coming here, you come here to learn what you are, but you cannot learn what you truly are. You cannot learn your true identity until you know what you are not. And interacting consistently with the darkness, I feel like, teaches you that, right? In some way?
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I mean, I'm definitely one of those where I don't know what I want, but then I know what I don't want. And it's through those lessons where it's like, I know what I don't want for sure. And I mean, through that, I have figured out, okay, well, I like this, I like that, you know, maybe I can't eat this anymore, but it's like through different periods of growth. It makes sense. Yeah, you do have to learn hard lessons, unfortunately, to really know who you are more and what you want. And then even then, when you figure it out, they're going to throw another curveball at you, and then you're learning some other aspect of your life that you never knew existed. And it's a whole crazy thing.
It's a very, very crazy experience to be here. But to your point, it's like, well, what is this for? Because I mean, the bigger question is like, well, what is this really for? You know, because, you know, when you read for people, like do psychic readings, whatever, for people, a lot of people have the same question, which is, what's my life purpose, right? Like, why am I really here? And I think that's the question, the quintessential question that we all ask ourselves, well, why are we really here? And if you, like you said, if you kind of think about the collective itself, if we subscribe to the idea that God is all one, is one entity, if we are all just God, then everything that we do, everything that we say is interconnected. Therefore, we're all learning and growing from each other, which, I don't know. I feel like it kind of, I don't know if God, I don't think God is malleable. I think God is immutable. I feel like his laws or its laws are unchangeable. Like, it's the foundation of the universe. But I feel like the expansion of the energy that we call God is based upon the things that we learn here collectively.
Right. That makes sense.
You know, because... You're like, so all done, check next lifetime.
Right, we're done, okay.
We got it, right? But no, I'm gonna tell you a little side story. Okay, so I had a dream, god, it was like 2 years ago. There's I promise it's relevant, everybody. I had a dream like 2 years ago that I was visiting my parents, and two of my sisters, the three of us were downstairs, and I watched two of my sisters arguing because one of my sisters can't stand my other sister's husband. In reality, this is true. And so she was sitting there yelling at her, trying to convince her to leave, you know, her husband, but my sister was like, I have, you know, three kids, we don't have the money, I can't do it. And so they're just going at it. And I'm literally just sitting there listening to this, but what is beside me? There's this thing beside me. Okay. It was a wormhole. Okay. It was a wormhole and I could hear it. It sounded like, it's like, how can I describe the sound? It was very deep bass. Okay. But it was going over and over and over, but I could see in this wormhole, there was this light blue light shooting through it constantly. It's like this operating wormhole just nonstop. And so I'm sitting there quietly listening to them. And when they finally shut up, I looked at my sister and I said, you know, you can do this all over again. All you have to do is climb in and it'll take you back to the beginning. And it was such a weird dream, but at the same time, I mean, it was so real because I've never experienced anything like that, but it was profound because it made me think about creation in itself, because the wormhole, it was black. It was black, but it had this blue light coming out of it, like erupting out of it.
Like a shimmer and, or something.
Yeah. But all I thought, like, this to me had a profound impact because it makes me think of creation coming out of this deep, dark void. And that makes me think of God's energy. And I don't know why. I don't know why I think that. When we think of God, we think of all this golden, bright light, fire, and all of that. But for me, when I had that dream, it really made me think of God kind of being part of this deep, dark void, just waiting for our creations. Does that make sense?
Waiting for our creations?
Yeah.
Like there's dark void that, through all the lessons and everything that we learn, it fills up the void. Is that what you mean?
It could be filling up the void, but I feel like that void is an empty space that we create from, that all creation comes out of. I don't know why I had that, you know, thought that that's where, that's like the, I don't know, the think tank, if you will.
Right.
The universal think tank where some of our ideas like come from. Or that, you know, we expand. I mean, I don't know, but it's always made me kind of think about the other side in terms of there being this massive dark void, but the darkness isn't necessarily equated with dark energy, the negative energy. It's just a void that has yet to be filled, you know, and expanded upon. I don't know why I've always kind of thought of that, but that dream had like a big impact on me because I've never seen anything like it. And I've been told, and I know I've deviated a little bit here, people, sorry, I'll bring it back. But I've been told, you know, and I've heard celestial music sometimes when I'm sleeping. But also there's this book called Something to Heaven. Oh, my God, there's like so many heaven books. But there's a book, Something to Heaven, where he talks about, I'm sorry, you guys, I will remember this by the end of this call, where he talks about when he crossed over during his near-death experience, that to get to other dimensions, to get to other levels, you had to match the vibrational music because there was a different vibrational tone and music to each dimension. And it just made me think about the way souls kind of travel in the afterlife through music and vibration. And that's why I heard that very deep bass kind of going off. I don't know. Anyway, I digress deeply.
That's an interesting one. And I mean, just going off the music, I mean, I'm kind of a hard shell. And, you know, if anybody knows me, they know I'm kind of, you know, can be a little bit of a hard ass and hard to read at times. But, you know, at the same time, I can be very emotional and direct and or not direct, but like soft. And it just depends on the moment. But I always like to try to put blocks up because I don't want anybody else's crap. But when I was taking, I've always liked, you know, music. I was in band in high school and, more so like the classicals because they just relaxed me. But when I was first starting out in this stuff and then finally I went and took my quantum healing course, the whole time it felt like I wasn't feeling what I wanted to get out of it, or I wasn't getting like a reaction. And even the teacher kind of noted that, but she told me later. But we did this part where it was toning or like sound healing, but with our voice, which was the weirdest thing because I had to do that with my voice and I'm not a singer by any means. But when my partner ended up, you know, whatever note that came out of her mouth, and it was just kind of like whatever she felt, it wasn't anything that was structured. It was just, you know, intuitively seeing a note for the other person that will heal them. And as soon as she started, you know, singing that note for me, my body just instantly like relaxed. I just kind of sunk, and it was just like everything just like went into the ground or something happened. I remember it was just very calming to me, and it had an effect on me. And the teacher afterwards, she was like, wow, she's like, nothing else was doing anything, but as soon as that tone came on, like, I just like instantly was in another world. So I can definitely see how sound, just going back to this, how sound can make a difference, because for me, it's actually been one of the things that really does affect, you know, my feelings. And I think for everyone too, but it just like, it's very calming. I just bought a bowl a while ago, and it, you know, resonates to the tone of the heart chakra. So occasionally I'll just go and I'll ring it. And it's just very soothing and calming. So I think that definitely resonates with me, at least as far as having, you know, different notes to get to different dimensions, and everything has a vibrational tune or tone to it, at least from what I believe.
Yes, I totally believe that too. So my other question I kind of have about this whole figure we call God, just a couple of things to preface this. I remember when I first started talking to my spirit guide, and he always called, I never asked why, I just respected it, but he always called God the Jehovah. And I was like, okay, that's very biblical, but that's fine. And so he always told me that he never referred to God as him. He was like, God is the Jehovah, but he said God, and the angels told me very clearly, God is clearly all that is, and that will ever be. And that is it, point blank. It literally is all that it is. It is all life. It is the creation of everything. It is what you called, like you said, Aaron, you know, the source of all things, the source energy. So it made me also wonder with that information. So you know how as humans, we have a lot of emotions, right? Like there's a spectrum of, you know, deep anger to deep love. And it makes me wonder, again, as you kind of asked earlier, so maybe I'm kind of harping on this question a little bit. So then could we imagine that this creative energy, also the aspects of this creative energy could include things like disappointment, anger, frustration, arrogance? Like, do you think that this God has had, I don't know, emotions, feelings? What do you think?
Oh, God. I mean, if God is everything, then I guess, yeah, I've never thought about that before, that he does have the emotions. Cause I mean, to me, God is, you know, he's in my mind, it's a loving energy. Like God energy is a loving energy. It's there to help you to learn, to grow. And I mean, it's from everything that I've practiced and learned, it's like our purpose is to advance spiritually and, you know, increase our vibration and increase our, go to like the level up, whatever that might be. So I always envision that, okay, God wants us to do well, to do good things and to help each other. But then if God is everything, then, you know, he's also the one that's angry and upset and causing these, you know, whatever issues and day-to-day things that just piss us off, you know, to happen. Oh my God. Yeah. So, I mean, it makes sense, I guess, that he could potentially be all of these things. You know, if he is everything, why can't he be the anger or the hate? And if he is learning lessons through us, then it makes sense that he wants to experience what, you know, this person, because everyone also is different. We each have different personalities. And every time we reincarnate, we don't have that same personality ever. We will never repeat that. And that will never happen, even if you try, just because our soul is experiencing different things with different environments. So, you know, each one of us is extremely unique in that aspect. And so it's an experience that, you know, again, if we are connected to God and we are God, it's an experience that God has never had. So he's learning at that same time, whether it's love, hate, anger, compassion, you know, everything, right?
Right. And you see, those are questions. I mean, truthfully, those are questions that I kind of have. And I don't know, like in my heart, like you said, yes, if God is everything, then literally it's every single thing. But again, that kind of begs the question of free will, because here you are saying one thing, like God is all this loving energy, you know, and this is like a concept that you find, you know, in New Age community big time, like, oh, you know, sit, be still, be one with God, feel the love. Well, I'm not feeling the love.
Wrong channel.
You know? I think sometimes there can be some very delusional statements that are made within that community. But yeah. I feel like I do wonder about that, because I will say this. There are times, and I think we all can agree, there are times in your life where you have been on your knees praying, yep. you know, from everything you got within you. And you feel as if you were never listened to. You feel like your prayers were never answered in that situation. And when those situations happen, of course, it's a test of faith. But at the same time, it just makes you question, well, why are we really here then? Because this whole idea about God being this loving father figure who wants to teach you and support you, you know, and help you grow, then why would he not answer your prayers? You know what I mean? And I feel like that's one big thing that deters people from believing in this figure that we call God, because there are times in life where we feel, you know, so, I don't know, kicked in the gut, where we feel like right. we've been so defeated, and yet, you know, there's supposed to be this loving energy watching over you, and you're like, well, where the hell is it? Why will you not answer me? You know, and those things make me question sometimes, well, what is God's role then in our life when we're here operating as humans?
Right. I mean, from my experience in that, and that's a really good point. But in my experience to that, like, I've had very dark times, you know, and you know very well, like, the stuff that I've gone mm-hmm. through. And I remember at, you know, where I had quit my job, and I had taken, you know, 2 months to just enjoy life, see family. Of course, I had like no money at the time. And I just, the job was a great job, just not for me. It was killing my soul. So I decided, hey, I need a break. And after these 2 months, you know, it was during the summer, I was kind of at a point where I was like, crap, like, what the hell am I going to do? I need some income. I need to, you know, I need something. It doesn't need to be, you know, a high paying job, just something to get the bills paid, be able to eat, you know, and gas to get wherever I needed to go. And that was literally all I, you know, was really asking for. And of course I'm the type, you know, that where it's like, I will at least put in some effort, see what I can get. And I think that most, from my experience at least, and from what I've told others, is, you know, you just have to put a little bit out there and show that you're willing to do some of the work. And I remember I was just sitting down, and I was like, I just closed my eyes, and I, you know, called on Archangel Michael, which I tend to do mostly when things are bad. I should do it at all times, but, you know, when things are bad. And then I called on my guides, and I specifically called on a guide to help me get work and to help me make money to get the bills paid so that I can survive. And 2 hours later, I'm, you know, at a cafe, and I'm sending out applications. And at that point, I think I was just sending out anything, whether it's part-time work, full-time work, just anything to get, you know, something. And I ended up getting a call from one of my old jobs that I had reached out to maybe 3 or 4 weeks prior to, but at that time they did not have any openings. And one of my old colleagues, I guess, had passed on my information to someone in the educational department, and they had a role, temp role, for a month. And I just remember, like, when that happened, I was just like, holy crap, I'm going to have food for next month. And so it was like, it was one of those things where I didn't even remember that I had reached out, but I closed my eyes and I prayed. And they could have easily reached out to, you know, a contract or an agency, a staffing agency, you know, reached out to anybody else. But it was like, no, this was right there for me. And that wasn't the only time that happened. I then after that, I was like, okay, well, let me test things, you know. And, you know, since then, I've realized that for me, I just ask, I literally sit there and I ask, and I'll ask for something specific, and I make it as specific as I can, but yet as open as it can be, if that makes sense, you know? Yeah. And as long as I put in like 15, 20% of the work, like, other things start to fall in line, and it just gets very, very easy, you know?
I think you made a really good point, in all honesty, because there's an assumption that, and I know you know this probably very well, and I think I've probably said this many times, but there's an assumption that when, let's say, you're praying for help or guidance, right? There's an assumption that God is just supposed to miraculously just give it to you out of the blue, like it's supposed to fall out of the sky, but as opposed to the thinking that God is supposed to work through you. So you're supposed to still do the work. And once you're doing the work, then that's when things start coming.
And actually, this is a conversation I had about 3 hours ago with my friend Cindy. You know, she was saying that her grandmother always told her to pray. And when I told my response to her when she said that, I said, yeah, but what is praying going to do if you don't put in any effort? You don't take at least a step forward and send out an application for a job, or, you know, go if you're like any situation, take action. That's my thing. It doesn't have to be a huge thing. It doesn't have to be anything giant, but as long as, you know, the universe or God or whatever you believe knows that, okay, this person is determined to get here, you know, let's see what we can do to help them. And sometimes you might fall flat on your ass, you know?
Yeah.
that's a lesson in itself.
And it truly is. And like you said, without putting in any effort, then things can't come. And I remember growing up, of course, I had the same, you know, belief probably that Cindy's, you know, grandma or mom told her. And there was one day I went to this talk and I heard this woman say this, and this has like totally changed my life because of my previous belief. And she said, you know, God can't do for you what he can't do through you, meaning do the freaking work. Like, yep. Commit and do it. Don't just ask for, you know, you to be, you know, given a handout. Like, do the work, show the commitment and the desire and the fire. And so for me, I just kind of wanted to say this because I don't want there to be kind of an assumption here that I don't, in terms of like my view of God in general, I don't see God as a man or a woman. I think it is literally energy, all, you know, this pulsating energy that's constantly creating. That's what my concept of God is. But, you know, of course, it's easy to call it God because for me, it sums up everything in one word, you know?
Right. And that's exactly how I was raised to believe it. And in some aspects, I kind of still, even when I think of God specifically, I think of the male energy of it, the masculinity of it. And so when I say like source or universe, I don't necessarily get that very like, oh, he is a man or God is a he. It's more so like, okay, especially when I use the word source. For me, source, I feel like, is just everything. When I say universe, I mean, and it's weird because I don't like to put like labels on the thing sometimes. So it's like when I'm doing something, it's like, it doesn't necessarily have to be a masculine or feminine, but I do believe there's a balance in the both and mixtures of. But I feel like there's some words that I use. And even a conversation we've had when we were talking about, you know, certain things this week where I was like, does this sound too feminine? Does this sound too masculine? I don't want it to sound this way because it doesn't feel right to me. Right. So it is a hard concept, especially because the world has ingrained God to be a man, even though now I do like the way, you know, things are kind of turning where, you know, they have female presidents and shows and female, like Supergirl, it's a show I've been watching lately. Yeah, I'm a Superman fan. But, you know, it's very much into the feminine, which I think is great. And then they're also bringing in other aspects in different ways. And of course, it's more in media and it's not everywhere because I feel like we're still growing world. And, you know, they're talking about transgendered in the show or, you know, homosexuality and a lot of shows as well. So it's very, you know, the tides are turning, but there's still a lot of work to be done just for people to see others as people rather than male and female, or, you know, even to think of the God concept as just a neutral energy or an energy that may consist of both whenever it's needed, you know?
Yes. And so there's two things I wanted to say to that. And I hope I don't forget. So the first thing I wanted to say is, yes, like there is usually when you use the term God, there's an assumption that, you know, there's kind of like this collective agreement that it's a man, right? But in truth, and this was something that it took me a very long time because that was very deeply rooted in me. That, you know, I remember years ago when I was praying, you know, I kept thinking of God as a man. And then one day when I started to kind of change and shift my beliefs, I began to pray to what I call the Holy Mother Father, because I felt like, yes, this very dominant masculine energy that is God. And I wanted more of this softer, gentler energy in my life. That and so I would start to pray for like the mother, you know, and the father together. And so I remember when I was talking to my guide once, he was like, you know, Deanna, he said, you know, it's great that you pray that way, but also don't limit yourself to just that either. Think bigger. It is everything. And that has always stuck with me as well. But I will say, because I still, even though I embrace that idea, of course, in my heart, I still now I'll call, because I know God is everything, even, you know, the angels and people and elementals. I know God is everything, but I lately, you know, just for myself, like, because I want more of a loving, well, let me not use that word. I want more of like, that's horrible. I just said that on this call, but I want more of a, I know more of a feminine, I'm more of a feminine, which I equate to being gentler energy in my life because I need that. I call more on the mother aspect of God because I need to be in tune with that energy more. The second thing that you said that I wanted to touch on really quick, because we only have about 6 minutes left of the call, is this whole idea of neutrality, which is a very powerful idea. Because I will say this, I've heard this from two people in my life, and this is such a big question for me, and now it's for you, because I'm going to pose it to you. So I have been told that one of the biggest lessons for us to learn when coming to Earth is to learn how to be a neutral spirit. That neutrality is key, that you should have no attachments to anything. You should not be have an emotional reaction. That neutrality is the strength and the wisdom of the spirit. And that's one of the key lessons. Do you agree with that?
Oh my God, that's a concept that probably need more time to think about. So and so you're saying no attachments and no repeat that again.
No, it's totally fine. So yeah. I've been told from a couple of people, one being my father.
Okay.
But one also being, and this was years ago, but one being a teacher here in Colorado, he mentioned it during this talk saying, you know, the one of the key things that we need to learn this lifetime to grow the spirit is to be more of a neutral spirit, not allowing our emotions to, you know, to affect us, not allowing the emotions to shape our perspective or affect our perspective too much, that we need to stay neutral.
How is that? I mean, because I feel like that's the part where I'm like not sure if I understand, because I feel like we are so emotional, like as humans, and everyone has emotions for the most part. You know, even if they say, oh, you know, especially I know they say men are not very emotional. They get angry. That's a huge emotion. They get upset, angry, frustrated. You know, even though they may not show compassion or love or, you know, that soft side of them, there's emotions. And I feel like, I don't know, I feel like to be completely emotionless it's a little hard of a concept to believe, because I feel like as humans, emotions is what we are. It's what we exude. And yeah, I guess at times we can remain neutral. And I think I'm one of those that I just kind of keep my composure. And it's very hard for people to read me at times just because I don't show emotion, depending on the situation that we're in. But I feel like emotion is who we are. You know, I don't know if I believe that necessarily.
And because, I agree. Yeah. I agree with you. I totally agree with you because, and like I said, I've heard this a few times and I've always been a little bit shocked. I mean, I understand the concept and I'm shocked by it because I feel like, well, if that was the case, then there's kind of no point to being here, because the emotions are expressions of how we feel, of what we're thinking. It's really just, I would say, the reflection of, you know, being a human, as you said. But I also think that if we can't feel sadness for the plight of someone else, if we can't, then we can't understand, we can't learn the lesson of like compassion. Like, right. I feel like, you know, being able to have empathy, which is to feel another's emotions, is super important for us to learn lessons here on Earth.
I think so. You know? I mean, that's the way we connect with people. And I think it's one of the main ways we connect with people is you find someone who's very similar to you, you empathize with them, you know what they're talking about, you understand them, and that's how people make those connections.
Exactly. So I've always kind of felt like I don't agree with that argument, but on top of that as well, certain aspects of ourselves, like anger, even though they have a more of a darker vibration sometimes, I still think that they are necessary for creation. Because I feel like sometimes, you know, some of us will channel our anger, you know, and it'll manifest as putting your fist in the wall, but others will channel their anger to create something, right?
A clean house.
So, yeah, to clean house, to create right. something. It can be a creative right. force. And I feel like, again, that's why I was like, I don't know about neutrality in terms of being an indication of a higher spirit. I feel like compassion, for me, has always been an indication of the evolution of your spirit, for example, you know, so just, yeah. those are just my two cents, because I've heard this argument a few times and I've thought about it, and I was like, it's hard for me to believe that even the creator that we call source is emotionless. You know, I can't imagine, because this is a question I've had also for my guides and angels. I was like, does God cry? I mean, I really wonder about that watching. I mean, does this energy feel, does it embody the sadness, the disappointment, the failure, the success, the joy? Does it embody all of that? Does it feel everything that we're going through? You know, but I feel like it must, right?
I would think so. I would think so. I just can't fathom the concept of emotionless, you know, God or an emotionless source energy. It just, to me, it doesn't make sense, because the more that we are here, going back to we're all connected, he's feeling what we're feeling, right? So it's like, right. I don't know. I can't put that emotionless aspect to it or the neutral aspect to it. I feel like emotions are pretty much the premise of what we are, you know?
Yes. And I agree. Cause I feel like, you know, if God or this entity was emotionless, then it would be more, it'd be very similar to somebody who is sociopathic, who has no remorse, right? Somebody like that. So I can't imagine like a, you know, sociopathic God or something like that. But
yeah.
Anyway, Aaron, I have to cut the podcast because we're past the time. And thank you for ranting with me and brainstorming. I call it celestial brainstorming with me about God. And I think all of the listeners today, I know we kind of deviated here and there, but it's a very big topic to tackle and try to break down, you know, into digestible pieces. But everybody, thank you so much. We're really appreciative. And Aaron, thank you for, you know, joining me and sharing your beliefs about God.
You're welcome. I'm very grateful to be here today. It was a very great conversation. I loved it.
Thank you. And everybody, please tune in for next week's podcast. We'll be seeing you soon. Thank you, everybody. Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.